Blog Talk Radio.
Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Yeah, my blood's so mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't quit the truth, it knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration. When human respect is disintegrating, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Of all the hate there is in Red China, then take a look around to Selma, Alabama. You may leave here for 4 days in space, but when you return, it's the same old place. The pounding of the drums, the pride and disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to take grace. And tell me over and over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. No, no, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Destruction. Welcome aboard the program, shipmates. I am your captain for this two-hour pleasure cruise, where we are dedicated to the fight and the preservation of freedom, regardless of that cost. Now remember, shipmates, freedom ain't cheap, but we can afford it. It is tyranny that we cannot afford. All right, tonight we have a very special guest that will be joining us tonight. Her name is Michelle Ryder. She is the mother of 16-year-old Isaiah Ryder, who has been kidnapped by the DCF just as Justina Pelletier. She's going to be here tonight to tell us her story. Also, Nancy Rubenstein, the educational director and volunteer coordinator of the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights, the nonprofit public interest law firm. She's going to be here as well. And you know who they are. You've been hearing me complain and scream and holler for the past 2 weeks. You do know who Michelle Ryder is. You do know who Isaiah Ryder is. Now, those of you that are just tuning in for the very first time to this program and you have no idea who Isaiah Ryder is, well, he's a 16-year-old boy that was kidnapped by the DCF. Why? Because his mother dared to argue with a doctor. Imagine that. A parent arguing with a doctor, saying, no, that's not the right care for my son. That used to be not only a right, but a responsibility, a duty, an obligation. It used to be part of being a parent. Well, not anymore. Now it's a crime. And speaking of crimes, and we're going to bring these two on. They're on here right now. We're going to get to it. It takes me forever to shut up, but that's just the way I am. I was taking a walk this afternoon. Just taking a walk, wasn't thinking about anything, and it just popped into my head. Now, I don't know what we can do about this, if anything can be done. Maybe I'm just reaching for the moon. I don't know. But I'm looking for anything. I'm looking for any kind of answer. And it just popped into me. You know damn good and well how I feel about the UN. I am not a fan of the UN. As far as I'm concerned, they do a heck of a lot more bad than they do good. However, they can do good. And I just thought to myself, you know what? This would be a perfect opportunity to bring not only this case, but every other case. God knows how many children we have right now that have been kidnapped by the DCF. Well, when you kidnap kids and take them from their parents, and they're not allowed to have any communication with the parents aren't allowed to know what any kind of medical care that these people are giving your child. That is crimes against humanity. Now, the Nazis got in a little bit of trouble for that. Let's see, that was after World War II? Was that it? Yeah. Remember that? Well, how is this any different? How are all of these cases, God knows how many, it's in all 50 states, at least tens of thousands of children. And when I say children, I mean from all ages up till they're 18. Being used as lab rats, test subjects, performing medical experiments. We don't do that to adults. We don't do that to children. We don't do that to human beings. Now, that is crimes against humanity. I don't know what I can do, but if there is a way, I would love to speak in front of the UN and see if they can't do something and at least investigate it. We don't have a DOJ. The DOJ isn't going to do anything. Our FBI isn't going to do anything. The medical community, you know, dang good and well, they're not going to do anything. They're involved in it. They're judges, politicians, governors. I mean, this is ridiculous. And when they do this, they're not – just because the parent dares to argue with the doctor, so they decide to punish the parent by taking away the child, they're not just punishing the parent. They're punishing not only the child but the entire family. And if you want to get right down to it, they're punishing every single citizen of this country. They're actually punishing every single human being on earth. But that's just how I feel. This is not who we are. This is not our society. I am not at all happy with our society today with this. So if you want to be a part of the program tonight, you want to ask Michelle or Nancy a question, 646-716-7978. I will be checking the chat room. You know that I'm terrible with it. But I will be checking the chat room tonight. Now, this is a serious matter, shipmates. They're kidnapping our kids. They're using them as lab rats, test subjects. And for what? Money, power, and control. Ego. That's it. This is some sick, twisted, and just plain evil. That's all this is evil. All right, let's bring Michelle and Nancy on board here now. Let's get this freedom ship underway. Now, I got a different number for Michelle, so I think this is her number, so let's give this a shot. Hello, Michelle. This is the captain. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so I did get the right number. This is Michelle. Okay. Hold on 2 seconds, and I'm going to get a hold of Nancy here now, see if I can push this right button. Nancy, my dear,
ahoy,
can you hear me?
Captain.
All right.
I'm here. It's good to be here again. And, you know, everything you said was true.
I am just beside myself. And Michelle, first of all, I want to thank you for coming on board this program. I know this cannot be easy for you. It's not easy for me. And I don't even know you. I don't know your son. I didn't know Justina Pelletier. I don't know any of these kids. And it's not easy for me and for you to have to go through this. Girl, you've got all my sympathy. I don't know how you hold up. I really don't, but I really appreciate you coming on board here tonight. So let's do this. Let's start at the very beginning, Michelle. When did you first notice that something was wrong with Isaiah? I do understand. I think he was like, what, 6 years old? Is that what it was?
Right. He had a fracture when he was 6 years old, and he fractured his leg. He had a fall while he was at school, and he developed what they called pseudoarthrosis, and it all started at age six.
Mm-hmm. Now, with that fall, this disease that he has, I'm going to try this one more time. Neurofibromatosis, is that correct?
Yes,
okay.
That's correct.
Now, did he get this as a cause from the first initial fall that he had, or is this something completely, totally different, or is because of what he had caused him to fall?
Well, it is different. It's a genetic condition that causes tumors on the nerve.
Right.
So
it's genetic. Okay.
Yes, it's a genetic condition, and it can be spontaneous as well. There are cases where neither parent has it, but his father has the same condition, actually.
Wow.
So. It causes the tumors on the nerves, and basically he was diagnosed with that early on. They clinically diagnosed him, and all we knew is that it may or may not, I mean, every case is different. Some are more extreme than others, but it may or may not cause tumors on the nerves on the inside of the body, on the outside of the body, or both. Well, Isaiah never had any tumors. He doesn't have any tumors visibly on the outside of his body. So we basically, after he fractured his leg, the focus was always on his leg, healing his leg, and we trusted the medical community. We went to the same hospital for 11 years, and we trusted these doctors, and each time, you know, it seems like his whole entire childhood we were basically either, it seems like, having a surgery or recovering from a surgery. All of these things that they were saying were necessary. And, you know, we kept hope that, you know, each time they would say, well, if we do this, then, you know, this will be the answer. And so if you do this, then this will be the answer. And, you know, it just seems like they never really found an answer. And, in fact...
Michelle, tell the captain about the surgery where the movements began in the leg.
Yes. Like originally, like when he had the amputation, he has a partial amputation that he had almost 2 years ago, and that's
now, is that
originally
from the knee?
When
is that like from
it's
the
below
knee?
The
or?
Knee. It's below the knee. Yes.
Okay.
And so for about 10 years, you know, we were in and out of the hospital, in and out of surgeries, and then they finally said, well, by this time he had been in a cast and a brace much of his life. I mean, since the age six, you know, he was always, you know, so he wasn't getting movement to the leg, and we're talking, you know, walkers and wheelchairs and all of that. It came to a point where from all the surgeries, they were putting rods in and out of his leg, and they were hitting growth plates, and so his foot stopped growing. He had leg discrepancy. The bone was then, like, basically they called it osteogenesis, where it was pretty much opaque, and it was deformed. It got to where it just wasn't normal anymore, and he was just fracturing, and the bone was too weak, and so he had fractured again. He had several fractures, and they put a plate in that his bone couldn't even hold. And so they told us, Isaiah, he asked the doctors, he said, am I ever going to be able to run again? And even walk normally. He said, I haven't been able to run since I was 6 years old. I don't even really know what that looks like anymore.
Oh.
And the doctors told us that if he had an amputation, that he could get a prosthesis and he would be out of the hospital. He wouldn't have any surgeries anymore. And this was the answer. I remember Isaiah being excited.
How old was he at this point?
At this point, we was 15 years old.
Oh, so this was like about a year and a half ago.
Yes, August 28th. It will be 2 years next month. Mm-hmm.
Now, yes. Just so we know where we are, where do you, I believe it's Kansas City. Is that where you're actually from?
Yes, we're from Kansas City, yes.
Okay, now how did you get then to Chicago? I mean,
right.
You must have been traveling all over the country, right?
Well, I wouldn't say all over. We basically spent, 11 years in Kansas City, and then he had the amputation, developed complications from that. Right after the surgery, within 24 hours, and the leg was moving involuntarily, and he was having severe pain. And then it just kept getting worse. And so that's when September of 2012, we were transferred to Boston Children's Hospital because they couldn't manage the pain. So the doctors, that's kind of where Boston Children's plays into the picture.
Now, how did you get into Chicago though? I mean,
Chicago.
Boston Children.
Right.
Boston. They told you.
Yeah. So basically, Isaiah was at Boston Children's in September of 2012, and at that time they were able to get the pain managed and the movement stopped, and so. They did that by numbing the nerve. So we know that it was a nerve problem. They did an epidural where they placed it directly into the nerve. It wasn't anything that they were medicating in his brain. It was the actual nerve. So they did that, and his pain was managed. The movement stopped. We went back to Kansas City. He weaned off all the medications, and for an entire year, he was good. He was working with his prosthesis. He wasn't needing pain medication. He had a job, a girlfriend. I mean, we were just,
living a normal life.
Getting back. Right. As normal as it could be. He was, he's doing really well. And then in September of 2013, he started having pain in that leg. And at first we thought it was prosthesis. And so we did, got that checked and did all these things. And then the movements came back, and he ended up back in the hospital. At this time, we just went to Kansas City again. That's where all of his care had been, and we had no idea what was even going on. I mean, he had been good for a year. We thought that was just an acute process, and so he ended up back in the ICU. They couldn't get the pain managed. They do these terrible treatments, and gave him ketamine, and he had a lot of complications from that. It's a form of PCP, and, they finally got the pain and the movement stopped, and then just a few months later, we were back in the same situation, and, just kind of lost, not knowing where to go. This is where we've gone, our whole life, and so, again, we went back to the same hospital. And they couldn't figure it out. And they actually, they blamed Isaiah. They caused this from the amputation. They caused this when they did the surgery. And then couldn't figure it out and blamed him.
Yeah, now this is what I don't understand. How could they, what is Isaiah, how is he hurting himself? He's coming in, he's trying to get rid of the pain. I mean, is that what they're trying to say, that it's all in his head? Is that what
Yes.
Well, they're also implying that it's in that Michelle has over medicalized him. It's exactly the same as what they did to Lou Pelletier.
I'm trying to contain myself, and I got to be honest. I don't know. Let's find out. When you first heard. Now you are in. How did you get to Chicago? Now you went.
I'm sorry. It's a long.
We got forever. Don't worry about it. No. You're all right.
Well, you know, we at that point when they were blaming him, they were telling him. My family and I were in there, and they were saying, you need to suck it up. A doctor actually told my son, you need to suck it up.
That was his exact words?
Deal with the pain. Yes.
Oh, that's pathetic. That is just...
And it was at that point that, I realized, we weren't going to get the help we needed in Kansas City. In fact, so... As far as the genetic condition, they knew that he had this genetic condition, and these doctors were taking care of him, but like I was saying, the focus was always on his leg, and so it wasn't even until we were transferred to Boston Children's that we even found out that he had tumors, and they did an MRI and actually showed me the tumors all up and down his spine, and over the course of that time, I found out he has many more, but that's when the diagnosis became real to me, because before I just knew, it was always his leg. But the way we ended up in Chicago, because I started reaching out to other people with neurofibromatosis, other moms that had children with neurofibromatosis. I wasn't getting education here, obviously, and in Kansas City we don't really have, there's only a specific doctors across the country that actually have any understanding of neurofibromatosis. There's not a lot of understanding. It can affect different, and I didn't have any. And quite honestly, I'm a nurse, and a lot of my, associates, coworkers, they don't even know what neurofibromatosis is. Some doctors, they don't know what it is. So, it's just not real common. But I started reaching out to the NF community, and there was a mother that she lived in Chicago, and her daughter had neurofibromatosis and also had an amputated leg. And they also had said that Isaiah had what they call malignant peripheral nerve sheath tumor, which is where the tumors actually turn malignant. And that's what they were telling us in January. And so that's initially why we decided to go out of Kansas City. And she recommended her daughter had that and actually passed away from that. I talked to several mothers whose children developed the MPNST that did pass away, and it was fairly quickly. And so she recommended, she recommended going there, and that's how we ended up in Chicago.
Wow. Now, how long was he in Chicago before they came and said he is now a ward of the state? How long was he admitted into the hospital, or was he kind of like an outpatient?
Yeah, he was admitted into the hospital on March the 31st when he had a surgery, and there was a doctor there who is an expert in neurofibromatosis. He's considered
an expert.
I
hate to interrupt, but I'm taking all these notes here now. That was March of 2014, so that was what?
Correct.
6 months ago. Okay.
Yes.
That's when you were admitted in Chicago. Okay.
Yes, he was, and he was admitted at Lurie's Children's Hospital. So he had tumors on his partial amputated leg that were causing him pain in two different areas. It wasn't just all over; it was two specific areas, and in those areas he had tumors. So there was two surgeons that did the surgery. This expert, considered expert in neurofibromatosis, and then a neurosurgeon, and they removed the tumors in the leg and then also some on the spine. And during the surgery, these movements were triggered again. In fact, when they came out to report, they were very shocked because his leg just started. They were doing nerve stimulation because when they were cutting on the nerve, they did not want to cut motor nerve. They wanted him to still be able to use his prosthesis. And so they wanted to make sure they were just cutting the sensory nerves. And so when they were stimulating the nerves, they stimulated the movements. And they came out, and after the surgery, the surgeon came out, and he was on the operating table. He was under anesthesia, and his leg started involuntarily moving. And so they first thought maybe he was awake. You know, they didn't know. It was, I think, very odd for them. But that's when it was started. And then it didn't get any better. It continued through recovery. It continued getting progressively worse. This was the fourth episode now since that he's had. In almost 2 years. So this was the fourth episode. And each time, it seems like it's worse than the last, and they just kind of build up. And so it didn't start out real violent. You know, he was having a lot of pain, but it got really violent to where his leg was involuntarily moving for 2 hours at a time, and he was in severe pain. He was suffering.
But, I mean, okay, now let's he's new to this. Now, how long, when they came up to you, what did they say to you? I mean, I tell you right now, I would have gone from complete disbelief to just sheer all out. I mean, I would have been completely angry. I would have lost it. But what did they tell you? I mean, was he still in surgery when they took him away, or was he in his room?
No.
How did that come about where they decided to take him as a ward of the state? This is where I'm find out.
So we were 2 weeks into the hospital stay at this point, and he was in pain the entire time. They had taken him into sedation 2 additional times to try to numb the nerve, and in fact, they couldn't even get him numb on the correct side of the body. There was one point when they manipulated the catheter, and Isaiah said, I'm numb on both sides, and he had 6 hours of pain relief, and then the catheter fell out, and then they took him back in again a few days later to try another one, under anesthesia, try another catheter. And it was right after that, so we're 6 days later, they actually admitted him to the ICU for pain management because they could not get his pain controlled. He was just writing in the bed in pain. The documentation, he was just saying, knock me. I mean, he was in severe pain. It was awful, you know. There was another child who was in the recovery room, and the parents, you know, were seeing this and were in tears with me and the nurse. I mean, it was just, I've never seen so much suffering. And I've done hospice work. I've worked with terminally ill people, and they were not managing his pain. So they admitted him to the ICU. And at this point, I started requesting, so we've now gone into anesthesia 2 additional times. My son's still in pain. He's in the ICU. They don't know what it is, and they can't get it controlled. So I'm asking, please, I would like my son to go somewhere else. He deserves to have another set of eyes, another set of hands. Looking at this and trying to figure out what's going on with him. Now, don't keep just trying to treat these symptoms. And he keeps having to go in and out of the hospital because, you know, this time it was triggered in the surgery, but the last 2 times it was triggered from pain. So, you know, it's not, you know, it was awful. So I was requesting a transfer to another hospital, and they basically, they were going along with it as if they were going to transfer him. I had called my parents. My parents had come up from Kansas City because he was not doing well, and they were injecting him full of all these medications. You know, there's a fine line when you're using morphine and Dilaudid and all these powerful medications. There's a fine line, and he was having crisis, and they would have to just push all these meds through, or he was being sedated. He was actually being sedated to be kept out of his pain. And then it was on, I was, you know, there was a tipping point. And 2 weeks into the hospital stay, my son is still having these, you know, the only time he's really getting rest is when he's sleeping. And they're lasting up to 2 hours. And that's when I said, you know, why is he not being transferred? You guys are telling me you're going to transfer him. I called an ethics committee meeting. I spoke with a hospital administrator. And I was demanding at this point, my son needs to go somewhere else. You guys,
right.
And I asked them, you know, where do you want him to go? And that was the tipping point. And they decided they were going to gain control. They were going to be in control. And that's just exactly what they did. They used extreme measures in order to strip my parental rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no warning. I that night, the night before, I had slept at the Ronald McDonald House, and I was on my way back to the hospital. There was a social worker that called me. I had talked to my son on the phone, and he had texted me and told me that they were weaning him off of a sedation medication. And the social worker, I told her that I would be there shortly. I was on the shuttle. And then when I got into the hospital, she met me at the entrance, and she told me that they needed to have a meeting with me. There was a doctor that wanted to meet with me, Dr. Harris. She was the head doctor of the ICU. I'd never met her. She'd never seen my son. I'd never seen her. So they took me back into this unfamiliar area, and there were security guards standing around and people, and I heard someone say, "Where's the mother?" They took me into this room with this Dr. Harris and a social worker, and they told me that they were taking my son for 48 hours, and I was just in shock. I said, you know, for what? How can you do this? You know, and they said it was for his protection and my protection, and it was for medical child abuse. And I said, well, I didn't know, what is that? And they told me to look it up, to Google it. There was some small information about that. And,
Were they very condescending and rude to you, or were they trying to be nice?
No. No, they weren't. They had a security guard there that was, they had the shuttle waiting to escort me out. They said they had the shuttle waiting for me, but they wanted to make sure before I went out into the lobby that I stopped crying, because they didn't want to see people to see me sobbing, and they, I was just in shock. I didn't know what was going on, what to do. I started calling family. I started calling attorneys, and one attorney told me that they were using that 48 hours to try to build a case. 48 hours turned into 24 days. I didn't see my son for 24 days. He was in the ICU 22 additional days, even with a visitation order from the judge. I didn't see him.
But I mean, just because they can't figure out what is wrong, and you mm-hmm. want to take your son somewhere else, well, it's
right.
ego, because they don't know what the problem is. Well, look, doctors, they know a lot of stuff, but they don't know everything. We're humans. We're not perfect, you know. But I mean, what I don't understand is this excuse. And they did the same thing with Justina Pelletier, using this medical abuse. Now, what was the medical abuse that they said that, let me try to rephrase this. What was the medical abuse that they blamed? I guess they blamed you for it. They were blaming you for having medical abuse on your son. Like you were
right.
kind of.
After 2 weeks, you know, so we had been there for 2 weeks, and basically if I would have just sat by and watched him suffer in pain and did everything that they said, then we wouldn't even be talking right now today. They said that I was interfering with his treatment. No, I was interfering with what they wanted, but I'm his mother, and
you have every right to interfere with you. That's your right. That's your obligation.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, don't.
Yes.
I don't know. So, now, how long has he been, I guess, in captivity? That's exactly what it is. I can't see it being anything else. How long has he been held by the DCF? It's been, what, 6 months
it's
now?
It's been 103 days now. So they basically, they're holding him against his will in Illinois, which is about a nine-hour drive from Kansas City. He's been taken out of the community that we live in, with family and friends and a great school and a very nice area, and just thrown into a whole different lifestyle. And it's awful what they have done. It doesn't even make sense. Honestly, if I would have heard this story a few months ago, I would have said myself, I would have said, well, what did the mother do wrong? Because we're taught that hospitals and doctors are safe and DCFS intervenes when intervention is needed. Well, that is not what is going on, and it's becoming an epidemic, and they're targeting children with chronic medical conditions that doctors don't understand, and they're either blaming the child or blaming the parents. And this all, like you said before, it's power, control, arrogance, money, greed. You know, they're making money off of these children. Cook County, Illinois, is making a ton of money. They're getting more money because they're special needs, because they have special needs. You know, they're medicating them inappropriately. You know, it's an awful scam that they have going on is what it is. And then
is he getting any medical treatment at all?
Yes, he is. He continues. He's being medicated. He's been going, so from the ICU, he went to another facility. He's been transferred around three times. He's now in a foster home. He went to rehab, and he still goes to doctor's appointments. I don't know all the details because they don't tell me everything, but I do know he's getting medications that he was not getting when he went into the hospital. And when he was discharged from the hospital, he was on 24 medications, most of those being pain medications and mind-altering medications. And when I finally saw him 24 days later when he was in a children's facility, he was not himself, and he was drooling, and he was reporting falls, and he was irate, and he was on all these medications. And
that's from the drugs.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And we went before the judge that day. We had an emergency hearing because DCFS was in contempt of the visitation, obviously, for 24 days. And that's why they were keeping me away. They kept him in the ICU. Who moves from the ICU? Usually, this is critical care. They kept him in intensive care unit, and they moved him straight from the ICU after they billed my insurance for 30 days, my private insurance, straight into an outside facility. Usually, you move from the ICU, you're just there just a short time to get stable, and then you move to another. They kept him in the ICU. It is unbelievable.
So now, have you
Michelle is an amazing person, Captain Ken. Michelle is, when you listen to her, can you believe that she can keep it together to even give that kind of a story? Since
I don't
know Michelle, I've heard her go through this so many times, but she's got that strength that a mother has because she has to do this. We're real concerned that Michelle's going to take good care of herself, but we've got to get her story out there. We're really hoping that your listeners are going to share this story with people, because you asked what you can do, and the reason that we're here today is because Michelle knows perfectly well that this case needs to be tried in the court of public opinion. And that's what got Justina Pelletier home. And that's what's going to get Isaiah home. And we just need people to talk about this case and to make phone calls to the congressmen in Missouri. If people who are willing to make phone calls to the congressmen and talk about Isaiah, this is what's going to make a difference. And I just wanted to say that I've worked with a lot of cases, and Michelle Ryder is one of the most exceptional people. But like Michelle will tell you, this is happening to people all over. It is, as she says, an epidemic. Absolutely.
It is. All 50 states. All 50 states. There's got to be at least tens of thousands of kids just – and a lot of them – that I have found out, you know, Nancy Raquel Okiai, she explained to me there are a lot of these parents, they don't have the money, they don't have the resources, you know, like some parents may have, like Lou Pelletier. I mean, they, you know, he had, you know, some of these parents, they have absolutely nothing. They can't get –
And they thought Michelle wasn't going to do anything because here's this out-of-state mother. What's she, out-of-state single mother, what's she going to do? They count on this. They count on people's powerlessness.
They're praying. They're like – they're
animals. They do pray because I have spoken with Lou Pelletier, and there is quite a connection with Boston Children's Hospital because – I had reached out to them for help, not knowing what was going on with Justina, but my son had a relationship with them. He had been there before. And those doctors were communicating with the doctors at Lurie. So, but when I spoke with Lou, they also target mothers who are by themselves because, you know, they waited until my parents left, and 2 days later, my parents left on April the 12th, and on April the 15th, they took me away from my son. But at the time, you know, he had said that, you know, that was Linda was there because, you know, he was with the family at home. But I've heard several stories where the mother is by themselves. They bully, you know, because they think, what are they going to do? You know, we're in control.
Right.
In fact, this was a true. You know, I had no idea. I've been in healthcare. I've never heard of anything like this. I didn't know about Justina. I didn't know. And so for an entire week, they didn't even have a court order to take my son. So from the 12th, I mean, from the 15th when he was taken to the 23rd, we didn't even go before a judge. That's a true kidnapping.
Exactly.
They had no legal right or order to take my son until the 23rd of April.
Now you've got representation. You've got lawyers involved in this, correct? Okay.
Yes,
is there a court case coming up? I mean, is there one supposed to be coming up?
Yes, on August the 11th, there is a case, and how I describe this is, you know, they're holding my son as a ransom, and on August the 11th, they're saying if I cooperate with them, they'll give me my son back. And so if I negotiate with my kidnappers regarding my son who they're holding as a ransom, then I will get my child back if I do everything that they say.
Well, what are they – have they given you any indication as to what they want you to do?
They have not, but that is what the August 11th hearing is supposed to be about. But we are also at that time going to point out, my attorney, that they have violated federal laws. They illegally took Isaiah and illegally placed him into foster care, and they continue to illegally detain him against his will. Isaiah has put a video out there. It's on Team Isaiah, and he talks about what happened to him and the abuse that happened. The criminal activity was Lurie's Children's Hospital and Illinois DCFS, and he talks about that, and he says his wishes, and he's told the judge, but that is what we are going to he is protected by a law. I'm Native American.
Well, this is a good time. Yeah, this is a good time, Michelle, I think, to talk about the Indian Child Welfare Act.
I've got
it
in my hand
out,
right here, right now. I was
just
going to go there.
As it turns out, Isaiah is a member of the Oklahoma Choctaw Nation.
Yes.
And that's what he is. He's Choctaw, right?
Yes, I am registered. My family is registered with the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. And Isaiah is registered as my dependent. So that was all discovered early on in court. In fact, it was one of the first questions that was asked when I appeared on the 23rd. Now, there's documentation in a petition that was signed by the state's attorney and the DCFS that they swore, and it says punishable under law, that Isaiah was not part of a custody case, that he was not part of an Indian tribe. And guess what? They never even asked. And he is. And so on the 23rd, it was quite a shock when they asked me. That was one of the first questions, and everyone just seemed, I didn't quite know everything about it, but everyone was shocked. But basically, the judge is the one that told me about ICWA, and they don't seem to follow it, but it has certain... there are certain steps that this was a federal law passed in 1978, so it trumps any of the state laws, and it has to be followed.
So as educational director of the Law Project, let me explain that to your listeners in a way that they'll understand.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. The Indian Child Welfare Act provides a higher standard of what we call the burden of proof. So when you go into court, if Isaiah goes into court, there's a question of is it probable cause? Probable cause, that's kind of squishy. You could do a lot of things with probable cause. But when you say beyond a reasonable doubt, that takes you into a whole different level of court proceedings where you've got to have expert witnesses and the due process is impeccable. And in this case, as Michelle has already discussed, this entire proceeding was illegal even before you apply the fact that Isaiah does have these rights afforded to him by the Indian Child Welfare Act.
There was one, I just, right when you were talking about that, I lost it. So if you are under, and you are registered under the Choctaw tribe, correct? You are.
Right.
So automatically, as far as I know, automatically your dependents are automatically registered as well. Is that correct, or am I wrong?
Well, in my tribe, yes, that is correct. But according to the courts, the only thing that they need to verify is that the tribe considers, so that they have to do their part, and they connect with the tribe, they notify them, and they did that. And the tribe said, yes, these are our tribal members. Yes, we recognize him as part of the tribe. So that's all been done and entered into the court.
Then he should have been released immediately, according to this law.
According to ICWA law, it states that even, there's certain rights. Now, this is a law that was passed in 1978, and at that time, when these laws are passed, usually something terrible happens, or, at that time it seemed like Native Americans were being targeted, but now this is, truly an epidemic, and it doesn't discriminate, I don't believe, against race, religion, financial status. This can happen to anyone, and I feel like the ICWA standards need to apply to every children, all the children. I feel that way, but they have to be enforced. The courts have to follow the laws that are set in place.
Pelletier, the judge said, Justina, you can go home to your family. Well, nobody abided by the judge's law, and then when they went back into court, what was a month and a half, 2 months later, the judge sided with the people that broke the judge's law. So, I mean, none of this stuff, they all seem to be working together. And this is why when it came to me with going with the UN, these are crimes against humanity. I'm sorry, but this is. You do not use kids as lab rats and test subjects. You don't do that to people, period. I don't care what your race or what your color is. I don't care if you're an illegal alien. I don't care who you are. If you're a human being, we shouldn't even be doing this to a lot of animals, much less human beings. But with human beings, you just don't do that. Now, with that video, I have it's already been on my chat room. That was the first thing that I put in the chat room. I posted it on Facebook 100 times. Every single show since I heard about this 2 weeks ago, that's the first thing I do on the show is I post it in there. So my listeners have seen the video, and that needs to come out more and more and more. I wanted to put it on YouTube, but it's not available for the system that I have to put the video actually on YouTube. Is there a way where you could put that on YouTube? And if you can, send it to me. I will put it on YouTube because I think the American people need to see the video.
Captain, we can't put Michelle in that position. Michelle is in a very difficult position where everything that she does is translated and skewed. Okay, so technically here's the difficulty, and so the Children's Hospital they can hide behind HIPAA and Isaiah's status as a minor, but if Michelle does anything, then it's going to be used against her. But there's another thing too, and that is, I think we need to be very, very careful and protect Isaiah because he's in a hard situation and he's doing the very best he can to deal with his environment, and we don't want to interfere with that. So we really want to organize. We want to organize people to begin to respond and to begin to call Congress to do whatever they can to help Michelle get the word out there. We need to do the same thing we did for Justina, but we do have to be very careful about the difficult conundrum Isaiah is living
now,
through.
Now, who is your representative?
There is videos on YouTube. It is already on YouTube, and there's a couple other videos, one where it has pictures and a song, but it's under Save Isaiah. So on YouTube, the channel is Save Isaiah, all one word, and it is on there.
Okay.
He's a very social fellow and a very handsome one.
Well, I tell you, I watched that video, and it broke my heart, I got to say. It really did. I really, and I watched Justina's video too. She made one, and I just, and it's not that they're not just punishing you because you dared to argue with them. They're punishing him. They're punishing your entire family, your entire community, the entire country with this stuff.
The inhumanity is shocking, and it's very, very hard for people to get their mind around. And it was hard for me. I mean, I've been working for the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights for 4 years, but these cases from DCF, it's kind of like they came on my radar maybe about 2 years ago, but it's been building, but that was just my awareness. And the truth of it is that these things have been happening for years and years, and the public needs
Since
to wake
the 80s.
Up. But it's very difficult because we want to trust doctors. We want to trust our medical system, and it's just so shocking to people. And because of that, it's almost easy to be the deer in the headlights. But we need for people to do the research and back this up, and satisfy your curiosity. But then this is about all of us, and we all need to work together. Mm-hmm. We need people to come to the Save Isaiah page. We need to get the turnout that we had for Justina, and we need to get it bigger because we sent a message to Massachusetts, and we sent a message to Boston, no, you can't do this. And Boston Children's Hospital has reached out to Chicago to suggest that they do another parentectomy. Well, we, the people, need to send this message back, and that is not in Boston, not in Chicago.
Not in America, not in the world, period.
That's right. Now,
this is
our second chance, and we need to grow this movement.
Well, you would think that with all the, there wasn't, as far as I was concerned, there wasn't near enough press about Justina Pelletier, but it finally, there was enough where she finally got got released. This, you would think that they would have learned their lesson with that, but obviously they didn't. And until they are brought down, they're going to continue to do it. A bully is going to continue to bully until somebody finally stands up and punches them in the nose. That's how it is.
That's
and
right.
until they
yeah,
are
that's...
brought down, they're going to continue to do this to more kids and more kids and more kids. Hey, look, if a bank robber is allowed to continue to go from one bank to the next and robbing, he's going to keep robbing banks. That's just the way it is. But who is
and that
the,
is the intention, Ken. That is the intention. Michelle was talking about the charge of child medical abuse. Well, that's a book, and that was written by the chief of psychiatry at Boston Children's Hospital. Your listeners have heard this name before. His name is Dr. David DiMazzo, and he wrote this book called Medical Child Abuse, and that is the excuse. And he and at Boston Children's Hospital, let's remember that their psychologist, Simona Buongiorno, wrote a paper that said up to 50% of all pediatric admissions are somatoform disorder. They could call it psychosomatic. They could call it bodily distress disorder, which is what the World Health Organization calls it. So they can use all these different euphemisms, but it's an excuse to take to weed out cases that are inconvenient and to triage them to psychiatry for, you know, human experimentation. I know that sounds really radical and horrible, but the more you read about this, the more you understand that this is really actually happening.
Well, me and Raquel, we spent all day one day looking up all of these so-called tests that they have, and we found what Boston Children's Hospital has got a million of these. All these hospitals, there's all these so-called tests that they're getting all these grants from the taxpayer. You're paying, Michelle, you are paying the government to take your child away. And you can't make a hide or hair of them. It's very confusing. It's a very, very large web. So they hide their tests, and they don't have to tell you what these tests are, and a lot of them are hidden. So they can do whatever they want to. Now, do you know for a fact that they are using Isaiah for a specific experiment?
No, we do not know that. We do not know that, Ken. We don't know that. What we do know, and, you know, Michelle doesn't have – there are people doing a lot of research. We're behind the scenes here, and Michelle really needs to take good care of herself. But, yeah, there's that's exactly the kind of research that we're doing. We're looking into what are all the studies, who's eligible, and we'll talk about that another time because that's really interesting. But you know what? We really, really need to focus on the fact that we need to do something, and we've got to get the voices out to the Congress. Now, Lou Pelletier has invited Michelle to join him in Washington, and maybe that can happen. But you know, that's Michelle is not working. She's dealing with this. But what I'm saying is, we the people have got to be calling Congress about this, and we need to do it now. Congress is only in session for a little bit longer. We need to make those calls. But yeah, the research about the studies. I pulled up a paper from 2013. I think it was Children's Lurie, but anyway, it was about comorbid anxiety and ADHD disorders in adolescent males with neurofibromatosis. How close is that? But we do not in any way, shape, or form know that Isaiah is a part of any medical protocol study.
Well, let's just hope not. I mean, it's bad enough that he is away from you. You can't have any contact with him. That's what I understand. Is that true? Can you have any contact with
him? I can have contact with him, but it is supervised visitations. Now, there was an incident that happened in his foster home where his safety was threatened, and he called me and my family and for help. And at that point, his phone was taken away, so there was a 9-day period that I was not able to speak with him. And because this is kind of what they did to him in the hospital too, when he was, you know, his family his mother, I'm ripped from him. He's in pain. He's in the ICU, unfamiliar state, unfamiliar hospital. And they're telling him, do not call your family when you're in pain. And they told him if he did, then they would take his phone away. That's what they threaten, and that's what they do.
I say
that
qualifies as a crime against humanity.
Yes. These are. And we can't get our Department of Justice to look into it. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they weren't somehow involved in it anyway. We've got governors that are involved in it, police, social workers, psychiatrists, on down the line, judges. I mean, how, unless, I know the American people, we threw a big stink with Justina Pelletier, but we can't keep doing this every single day for every single case. We need to have one big case. Something's got to happen. Something's got to break. This stuff has got to stop. That's why it came to me. Why can't we go to the UN?
We have to, at the very, we have high hopes here, very high hopes. And we're going to get Isaiah home because people are going to help, and we're going to do it. And then after that, we need to talk about what Isaiah's law is. Will it be about raising the standard of burden of proof to beyond a reasonable doubt for every child in America? Will it be required? There are all those things to talk about. Yes, but the fact that 50,000 people came, or almost 50,000 people came out to join a Facebook page for Justina Pelletier says that the power is there, and we need to, and those muscles, people did, I watched, it was so exciting working, you remember, Ken, working on Justina Pelletier's case, to watch people who've never done anything like this in their lives learn that they have the power to exercise and to be the citizens that we all really were meant to be in this country. So this is not a bad thing. People can do this. It means picking up a telephone and maybe being a little uncomfortable and saying, I've never made a call like this before, but I know about this kid, Isaiah Ryder. This is what, and I can't even believe that's going on, and I need to let this congressman know. Make that phone call. It doesn't matter what you say. That's what's
Missouri.
Great about this. Who's your congressman?
Yes, so the governor is, the congressman is Emanuel Cleaver.
Emanuel Cleaver.
Okay, he's going to get a letter from me. Who's your governor?
Emanuel Cleaver.
Governor is Nixon, and they did say, I saw posted that they were recording the number of people and the support Isaiah has. They said that today, and that they would pass it on to the governor. So they are taking note, and they said they're getting calls.
Oh, of course they do.
Yeah, they're always
taking. People are, this is, for me, when this happened, I questioned a lot of things, because we kind of live, it's like there was a film in my eyes, and it was removed, and there's this dark side of our country that no one wants to admit is happening, because we all want to feel that we're safe, and if we admit that this is happening, this means that we're not safe, and our children aren't safe, and so it is happening, and I reached out to an entity in Washington. I was reaching out to everybody. I've been doing that this whole time. Who can help? Who can change this? And I asked them, I said, how can this happen? How can someone take my child? And he said these words, they play over and over. He said, because of years and years of no one speaking up. And that's when it hit me that I will speak up. I will not suffer in silence. I will be Isaiah's voice and other children's voices as well, because this has to stop. This is wrong.
It is.
And I think the first step is admitting that it is happening, instead of, thinking that there's more to it. This sounds crazy. I mean, and it is crazy. And it is, we will never, it will never make sense of this scam, this nonsense that's going on, because there is no sense to make out of it. I mean, it's wrong. It's a crime against humanity, like you said.
Well, people, human nature, when they don't, humans don't like truth and they don't like travesties. So when they hear something like this, immediately their brain turns to the
right.
other direction. Well, that can't be real. That can't
right.
be true. There's something more to the story. Was the mother really this? Was the mother really that? Was the father this? Was the father? They don't want to do that. Another reason why they don't want to get involved, because they might have to get off their ass and actually do something. And that's
and
what
then there's another
like
reason. And then there's another reason, and that is that they're afraid.
Exactly.
And a lot of people who have worked on the Justina Pelletier case are really going out on a limb, because the average parent today has a good reason to be afraid. How about the school trying to make your kid go on medication for ADHD? How about the school saying this or that or the other thing? There's enormous pressure. In Chicago, a lawyer in Chicago told me the other day that 40%, over 40% of the people who are homeless on the street in Chicago have been through DCSF.
And unbelievable, 40%.
People, yes, isn't that amazing? Over 40%, she said. And this is a woman who runs a nonprofit legal business on the side. She's a lawyer, and she called Children's Defense Fund. She's right in the middle of it. Her name is Mickey Moran. Over 40% of people on the street in Chicago through DCSF, and I sometimes just draw a blank here because it's so overwhelming. I have so much information.
Our prisons as well. You know, they
yeah.
say that I think it's 80-90% of our prisons are filled with children that were in foster care. That speaks for itself. I mean, these kids are being abused in foster care. There's terrible crimes happening to these children in foster care. And the government in the state was never designed to be a parent, and they're not a good parent. And, you know, the cases that actually need intervention, they don't get intervention, and we hear about it on the news. In fact, I just read an article the other day in Cook County in Illinois. DCFS was called, and they're being sued because a child died. A child was strangled, and they were called, and they didn't do anything. But then they're taking our children that we are trying to help get medical care, and they're taking those children from us. I mean, it doesn't make sense. You know, it's there's
and it's
a
like
lot
you
of
said,
money
Michelle. There
here.
Is no sense to be made of it. But
no.
yes, and there and that's one of the points that I want readers, I want listeners to think about, is that there's yeah. I mean, I'm a writer. You can tell.
Yeah.
But there is an agenda here, and this agenda goes back to Boston and Harvard and our friend, Chief of Psychiatry at Boston Children's Hospital, Dave DiMaso. See, they do have this very strange agenda, and that is they have this theory that up to 50, you know, that all these people are faking it. I mean, there's no other way to put it. But that they're and that they need to weed out all of those people from the system, and that's going to save money. That's the idea. That these people are an overburden on our medical system, and it's too expensive. But what it's doing is that it's costing more than money. It's costing us our freedoms. But it's also, as we all know about the Justina Pelletier case, that cost the state of Massachusetts millions of dollars to abduct Justina Pelletier.
Oh,
so,
sure.
But that is the theory, and that is the theory of the book Medical Abuse, written by Dr. Dave DiMaso of BCH, who is the institution that took Justina Pelletier, and that is their agenda. That's their agenda all over the country.
And Big Pharma is big with that. And you were right with the schools. My mom just retired a couple of years ago from the school district. She was there forever. And it got to the point, mom was complaining all the time. I mean, every time a kid acted up in class, which is part of being a kid, first of all, and immediately the first thing they have to do is they have to drug the kid. They want the kid stoned, so the only thing they can do is just implant the information that they indoctrinate the child. Because if the child is
well, you know, the bill
in
how about the bill in Congress, the Murphy bill? You've been talking about that.
No, I haven't.
The Murphy bill.
I'm going to be looking this.
Well,
up.
That just passed in Ohio yesterday. Yeah, in Ohio. So this is an understandable reaction to Newtown and some of the shootings to say, oh, mentally ill people need to be force-treated in their homes. But then forget about the fact that all the school shooters were in mental health treatment. But anyway, these laws are passing to make it easier for people to get locked up, make it easier for people to be forced drugged in their home, because that's treatment noncompliance if you don't want to take pharmaceuticals. You're not being compliant. And parents, when they have their kids taken out of their homes, oftentimes the bargain for them to get back is they have to agree to mental health treatment, read that to mean drugs. So they're saying, well, if you're taking these drugs, then we'll let you have your kids back. This is absolutely...
Well, if you're taking the drugs, it seems to me that you wouldn't be able to, be a responsible parent if you're on these drugs. I know they're not that powerful, but they can be powerful enough. And if you look, and I've done a lot of research on this, and I've paid attention to all this stuff. All these mass shootings, they're all on these psychotic drugs, your Prozac, and your all these other names. And then when they get off of it, so your brain doesn't know how to function anymore because it's only been functioning because of this drug. Now, once the drug goes off,
Captain Ken, you're really amazing.
And now
you are really amazing.
But the brain doesn't know how to.
Because I'm an expert, I'm an expert on psychiatric drugs. That's what I do. I mean, the reason I'm the educational director for the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights is I'm an expert on psychiatric drugs. And I'm really impressed with you say you don't know anything, and yet you really got the nugget there. There are several classes of drugs, psychiatric drugs. You have your sedatives like benzodiazepines. People take sleep medication. You have so-called antidepressants. And then you have these things called neuroleptics. And then there's one more called mood stabilizers. All these drugs. There's no such thing as a chemical imbalance until you take one of these drugs. And then your brain chemistry is changed and it adapts. And it's like you say, Ken, people cannot discontinue these drugs. So the thing is that there's a chemical called serotonin. People have this idea that that's involved in depression. Well, it turns out not to be. It turns out to be statistically insignificant the way we were hoping and the way that these drugs were developed to believe that there was this chemical imbalance. But it just didn't turn out to be true. But what we do know is that if you have too much serotonin, this is the thing we knew. You learn from mistakes. The mistake that we've learned from antidepressants is that too much serotonin causes violence, aggression, suicidal ideation, and homicidal ideation. And that reaction occurs, it can happen anytime, but most commonly it happens either when people just start taking a drug or if they discontinue the drug abruptly. And because people feel so miserable on these drugs, they don't want to take them. And so,
when they get off of them,
this is what happens.
And they kill people.
And it's withdrawal. And the thing is, if you're on an antidepressant and you stop taking your antidepressant and you start to, really have it, get really hostile or whatever happens to you, you'll go to the doctor. They'll say to you, well, see, this shows that you need the drug. It doesn't mean that at all. It's a discontinuance. But doctors, I have to tell you this, doctors are not trained to understand this. They are trained by the drug companies, and the drug companies train their representatives to give doctors a certain perspective. And so the doctor will say, here, take this. This is well tolerated.
Well, the doctors are getting
you're having a bad reaction.
Every time they prescribe a drug.
Bipolar disorder.
Yeah, every time the doctor prescribes a drug, they're getting money. The doctors is involved in this as well. They're making money. Everybody's making money on this stuff. And it's all the taxpayer money. For what?
That's right. That's right. We don't have a health care system. We have a sick care system. Except I have to say, talk about nurses like Michelle Ryder. And Michelle Ryder knows, I hope people who listen to this interview will remember that you were listening to a hospice nurse. This woman knows pain. This woman knows suffering. And so if she's not, remember who this woman, they couldn't have chosen the worst, a worse person to mess with, in my opinion.
Well, good.
Well, the reason that I even got into hospice was, The tornado that happened in Joplin a few years ago, do you guys remember? I mean, it was huge.
I do.
Yes. Well, I had family that lived in Joplin, and when I heard about this, I said, you know, I want to help. I want to use my skills and go down there and help. And originally when I went down there, I was helping with my aunts and just doing some work in my aunt's church. And I said, you know what, I really feel like there's more that I can be doing. I can be working as a nurse. So they told me where they were meeting, and I went there. The Red Cross was there, and they needed nurses. And so I worked with a team of people, and we went out and met with all the families who had lost someone. And we talked with them and grieved with them and, you know, listened to them. And then we gave them, you know, a monetary gift from the American Red Cross, the American people. And it was then that I realized that, you know, this was something that I wanted to do. And I actually, you know, I don't, like, think about this, but someone reminded me of that today. And they said, you know, and this is someone that went and spent a week and, you know, counseled with people and tried to help them through this terrible grief process. This is how we repay her, you know. And I like I said, I didn't even remember that, but, you know, and the Pelletiers, you know, very nice people. I mean, they, you know, this is, it's horrible what's happening. And then they're, you know, on top of that, they're treating, you know, me like a criminal, and they're treating my child like a criminal.
You would think that you being in the medical business, you'd think that they would have a little more, be a little more sympathetic with you and try not to screw you over the way they did. I mean, you being, you know, a nurse and all, I mean, you would think. So obviously you're right. They are beyond not prejudiced. They don't care.
Yeah, she's right. There's no sense to make.
If they see a wounded duck, they're going to go right for it. They don't care. Mm-hmm. This is just absolutely wrong, and I still can't get it out of my head. These are crimes, you know, of humanity. Now, what can we do? I know, Nancy, you're in Alaska. Michelle, you're in Kansas City or in Chicago. I'm here in New York. What can we do?
And we all have phones. We all have telephones. And we all can write letters. Oh, my gosh, if you write a letter... Because these politicians care.
Some of them.
These politicians care because we put them in office.
Right.
We have control over these politicians. This is what we need to do.
Well,
that's how Justina Pelletier got home.
How can we form a rally?
I think we can partially take some of this discussion over to the Facebook page. We need people to come and join us. And Team Isaiah. And let me tell you that Michelle's attorney, Randy Kretschmar, and the great investigative team that we have, and I'm working as a press person, and will be doing a lot of media stuff from the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights, which is a nonprofit public interest law firm. So we're going to promote this. So come. Facebook is our friend. And
I just got a from the chat room. It says on here from one of my listeners. It's an election year, so this is the perfect time, and November is coming up. November is coming up, so we need something big. I mean, can we go to Washington? Where can we make the biggest stink? The thing that we have coming up right now,
and we need to. It's great to have people listening in New York. That's really awesome. But think about what's going on in Cook County. It's insane, and we need to get bodies out in Cook County. So if people know people in Chicago, this is the time to call your old high school friend in Chicago. This is the time to reconnect with your college, you know, ex-sweetheart who married your best friend. I don't know. It doesn't matter who. Call anyone you know. And Michelle, tell us about Isaiah's birthday.
Yes. Well, I did want to say, so that is on, I don't know if you meant, that's on August the 11th. We do have a peaceful protest that we are coordinating, and we do want everyone there that is able to be there. This will be the first time that Isaiah will actually be there. They have denied him that right as well. He's asked to go to the hearings, and there's been quite a few, and he's been denied that, but he did tell me via text today that, guess what, Mom, I'm going to be there. And I just, you know, I thought of him immediately. You know, I want him to see all the people supporting him and that we are, you know, being his voice and fighting for him. And,
well, Michelle, is there anything that, you know, Justina loved stuffed animals. Is there anything like that, whether baseball hats or, I mean, what is a 16-year-old boy like?
They call them, and I never called, they call them snapbacks. that's what they call baseball caps. We didn't call those, but I think that's what they call them in his generation, snapbacks. Yeah, he loves hats. He loves hats, and I didn't even think about that, Nancy, that he loves hats.
What if we just got tons of hats there?
There you go.
He loves that. And his birthday is August 27th. He will be 17 years old. And for months now, we have had a beach trip planned. Isaiah found out right before his surgery to have his leg amputated. We went to the beach. That was actually his first time seeing the ocean. And he loved it. And there's pictures of him in the ocean on Facebook, on Team Isaiah. And so we've had this trip planned for 9 days, right off a condo, right off the beach. And this was planned exactly 2 years after, you know, the last time he was there, after the amputation. And so we really, we want Isaiah to be able to go. This is something that we've planned for months. And I mean, I don't understand any of this, and, you know, I don't, we really hope that they will let Isaiah go, and he will be able to enjoy this trip that he deserves. I mean, he's
Absolutely.
Been through a lot, even before this. He's, you know, since he was six, he's been
well,
through
Well,
let
a me lot. Ask you something, Michelle, and maybe you can answer this, Nancy. This is what, and I ask this question to God and everybody with Justina Pelletier, and it's very similar. Now, Justina Pelletier was from Connecticut. She goes to Massachusetts. Well, Massachusetts took a citizen from Connecticut and held her captive. Now, you are from Kansas City. You're from Missouri, and now your
Missouri,
son is held
yes.
captive from Illinois. Now, my question.
Yes.
Why can't the governor of this your particular state say, hey, wait a minute, that's my citizen that you kidnapped. I demand you bring this citizen, my citizen, back to my state. Why can't the governors do that? This is what I don't
Well,
understand.
I think people need to ask the governor that, don't they?
I did. I wrote the governor I don't know how many times with Justina Pelletier.
Well, maybe some of your listeners. I'd like to give the governor a call. I want to make sure that my number is part of that. And that's what it's going to take, all of us doing this.
But, I mean, if that is a – how can one state – I mean, legally, my question
see,
is –
Well, see, here – okay, Ken, let me answer
another,
that. Let me answer you.
You know?
Okay, let me answer you. So what I'm thinking as from the legal perspective, and I think that this is also where what Liberty Counsel is probably thinking, because Liberty Counsel is very Liberty Counsel has communicated with Michelle. This becomes this once there's a court ruling, then this goes to the appellate level, and then all kinds of things become possible. And that's what the Pelletiers have got to be doing a lot of research on right now, and that's what their lawyers are doing right now, because the real movers and shakers are the cases in federal court, and that's where and then essentially court precedent makes law. We need to get this to the appellate level, and then there are things. There are interstate commerce questions here. There are all kinds of legal questions that exactly what you're talking about, because it's not constitutional in no way, shape, or form.
No, so there,
and
it's
not constitutional on every level.
Out of the water.
But first we've got to get this boy home.
But I mean, this might be a way to get him home. Saying, look, this is he's a citizen of Missouri. He's not a citizen of Illinois. You don't have any precedence. Mm-hmm. You don't have any right. You don't have any legal authority to take a citizen out of your state.
And I think it's going to be very exciting to see what Randy Kretschmar is going to do. Randy Kretschmar is a very brave attorney. I know him in the past because he took on a case to sue for Medicaid fraud because of the drugging of young children with these powerful drugs on Medicaid. That's what we pay for on Medicaid. Is all of these kids in vulnerable situations, including all these foster care kids, being prescribed drugs. And the thing is, they're not even legal in many cases. And Randy Kretschmar took on one of those cases. He's a really smart guy. He's an aggressive guy with a huge heart. And he's gonna give this his very best. And we're going to take our directions from him.
Good. I've heard of that.
He's a very good advocate. And I think, you know, in order for change to happen, it's going to take, you know, all the things we've been talking about, education, understanding what's going on, and then a lot of people getting angry and saying, no, we will not stand for this. This is not going to happen to our children. And voicing that, we the people will not, we are not okay with this. But first thing is accepting that this is real, this is happening, you know, and then shedding the light. You know, someone said, you know, they use the analogy that they're like, this is a scam. I mean, there's money to be had, and they're like roaches. And when the light is shed, they scatter. And, you know, another thing they were talking about doing, you're talking about the interstate compact, was transferring Isaiah to Missouri but keeping jurisdiction in Illinois. Why would you do such a thing?
Well,
I even talked to the head of Missouri, and, you know, they said, well, I would think that they would, you know, transfer. No, they wouldn't do that because they want that federal funding that they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
They want that money. It's the exchange of dollars in the hands, and it's wrong, you know. I mean, these are children's lives. These are people. These are human beings. And I'm passionate about my son. I'm passionate about people. I've always been that way. It's why I became a nurse. That's, you know, and I hope that we can all stand together and put a stop to this. You know, I hope that can happen. This is very painful. This is something that you never imagine as a parent that you will ever be put in this situation. It's a nightmare. It's unbelievable. All of those things.
I can only imagine what Isaiah is going through. I know you're very strong, but I mean, even at 16. Now, 16. Okay, fine. You're not that mature yet at 16.
Right.
This kid has got to be scared to death.
Yeah.
I mean, he has got to be just, I mean, not only does he have a disease that is growing tumors on his nerves, which is causing an incredible amount of pain, but now to be taken away from his family and his mother, I mean, I can only imagine, and I am just beside myself with that. But what this kid is going through, he's got to have a strong mind too. And Justina, if it wasn't for Justina's strong mind, I don't think that girl would have made it. Honest to God. I mean,
these are amazing. Isaiah is an amazing child, and I know Justina is too. And yes.
But how many of these other kids that don't have that strong of mind?
That's
look at
right.
Kids that don't have that strong of mind. That's the ones
that
live in hell.
We have to speak up for them. Yes, we have to speak up for them. That's why, you know, I sometimes when people will say, you know, it's because they don't understand. It's a lack of understanding, a lack of education on what's going on. And I understand that part because I told you I would have been the same way. But I tell them, although it hurts because this is painful, this is something no one should go through, I tell them I will continue to speak up for my son and I will continue to speak up for you and your children as well. Even though you feel that way, I will continue to do that.
Good, good, good. Now, we need to get a big rally. Now, you said August 11th. Where is that? Now, I've got listeners all over the country and in Canada.
I think that's what we should talk about. I think that we should put our heads together and come up with some plans and bring these back to your listeners, because I have a feeling that there are a lot of people out there listening who really want to do this and really want to help us.
Right. Those that didn't get on board with Justina, I think maybe they might want to go, well, wait a minute. Now this is another one? Now we got a number.
Right.
You know, as soon as
right.
this one is over, there's another one waiting in the wings right now. There's a whole bunch of
there's
them.
There's
right.
many more. There's many more, and there's parents who aren't speaking up. They're told if they go to the media, they will never see their children again. There's a lot of media that they don't want to cover. There's many, and I've talked to them, and I told you, it's like the film was removed from my eyes. I had no idea, but many have no idea. But now that we recognize that this is happening, then we need to do something about it. You know, this is America. It's changed my understanding. I've questioned a lot of things. You know, this land of the free, you know, those are things that I've questioned because of what's happening with my son. But I do believe as we can band together and say, you know, no, this is not okay.
No, it is going to take the American people. We're going to have to get involved because the politicians are the ones doing this. The governors, the politicians, the doctors, they're all in cahoots with each other. So it is basically a war between the American people and our government. So we have to stand up. And you're right, Nancy.
And that war takes place at the ballot box.
Exactly.
Right. That's right.
We want our country back. We want the values that our founding fathers, you know, we want all of those things that are in the, you know, constitutional. We want our country back. You know, this is America. People, you know, there's many people who are trying to get into America, but there's a lot of things that are happening right here that need to be addressed in our own country.
Exactly.
And this is one of them.
I mean, we can't even get a veteran now. They still don't have a doctor. They still don't have a doctor. But if you're an illegal alien, you got all the doctors, you got all the food, you got everything that you need. I mean, then everything is upside down. It doesn't make any – my brain can't process this stuff. It really
Unless
can't.
They want you for a medical experiment, Ken.
Exactly. Listen, you're
right.
For a medical experiment. I mean, this – I don't know what to do, but just – You know, I want to
I'll tell you what, I hear so much about, this is what I do. I hear these cases, and I hear them all day long, and I've been hearing them for 4 weeks. So I hope that you will both forgive me, because I have to go eat something. And you know, one of the things that I love about this conversation is, I know that Michelle, I say, if I can offer Michelle Ryder anything, it's to help her do a little bit less, because she could do it all herself. And I know that that's going to be one of the challenges ahead is that Michelle's going to have to be taken really good care of herself, because it's going to be, there's a lot ahead. We got to get her to Congress. We got to keep her strong. And so, Ken, I hope you don't keep her too much longer, but I'm going to have to leave the show.
Okay. Well, I just want to ask one more question, Michelle. Where are you now? Where are you residing?
Well, I am going back and forth. Mainly I've been in Chicago. Right now I'm in Kansas City, but I'll be leaving in the next couple of days to go back to Chicago.
Will you be able to supervise it?
Yes, supervised, and I have to call and make arrangements, and it is with someone, and I have not seen him since July the 1st, and so I am traveling back to Chicago so I can see him. Like I said, primarily I've been in Chicago, so away from my home. The The protest that we're having is on August the 11th. It's at 1100 South Hamilton in Chicago, Illinois. It's at the Cook County Juvenile Center. We welcome
1100,
anyone.
What was that again?
1100 South Hamilton.
1100 South Hamilton.
Yes, Chicago, Illinois, at 8:30 a.m. And we welcome anyone who's able to attend.
Come
and,
to the Facebook
you know,
page, Team Isaiah, Save
yes.
Isaiah. We're going to have all that information for people, and people can get in touch with us. People can get in contact with us. And go
Team
ahead,
Isaiah
Michelle.
Team Isaiah is the main page. Just
well, my listeners
Team
have already
Isaiah.
Been they've already been Facebooking what you already gave us. Just got indication in here. They've done it several times in here, so my listeners are doing that as well. Now, you're a single mom. Now, are you divorced or are you widowed?
Yes, divorced, yes.
Okay. Is the father, is he involved at all in this? I don't mean to pry. I don't mean to be personal, but, I mean, it just seems like you're on by yourself. I mean,
right.
you've got a mom and a dad that are helping you, too, but, I mean, they can only do so much, but, I mean, you're
right.
Just one mom. I grew up with a single mom. My dad died when I was very young, so I didn't even know it. But, I mean, here, what my mom had to do to raise three boys, yeah, we had my grandparents, but what my mom had to go through to raise three boys, and we were not perfect little angels, let me tell you. And what you were going through, I know. I seen my mother, and I seen my mother break down and cry because we were brats, and we learned that, you know, this is mom. You don't do that. So I understand where you're coming from and how you could keep up your strength. I mean, I am not worthy. I mean, I'm bowing right now. I mean,
I agree.
Thank you. Well, I, you know, certainly have, you know, my moments, and Isaiah, he's an inspiration, and, you know, it's very difficult. I do appreciate the support. There has been a lot of people, that helped with Justina's case, you know, helping, and I appreciate all that because I can't, this is huge, this is big, and I can't do it all myself. My parents have been supportive and kind of taken, you know, his father has lived out of state and not been actively involved, and, you know, he's had some contact, but definitely not involved, and so it is very difficult. I think even with all the supports in the world, it's still, it's very overwhelming, and
well, it's got to be overwhelming financially for you as well, traveling back and forth. I mean, the headaches alone that you're going through. But eventually, I mean, the money's going to start running out, and you won't be able to go back and forth. This is...
Right. And there is a page that they set up. It's, Nancy, do you want to do... it's the BringIsaiahHome.org. And they've set up a GoFundMe site as well as T-shirts that they're selling.
But we will get all that information up for people. We will get it all up because
that
fundraising is one of the things that we really need to do. There's a lot that goes into a campaign like this, and we need people to help. And I'm sure that there are people who are listening who have experience with fundraising. We could really use the help, but we're going to do it no matter what, and we're going to get all that information up there. And
well,
then,
give me
and
that
it's, you know,
I
know Michelle. Michelle isn't going to talk much about the finances, but I'm going to say it. This is impossible for someone in her position to do, and she really does need the money. There's nothing like not being able to pay for the gas to get to see your kid in foster care. How about that? So we can really can raise money, and we need to.
Well, I'm on board with that. I am on board with you. That's bringisaiahhome.org, correct?
Yes, www.bringisaiahhome.org. It's all one word, and that's a website that was set up that has some actual articles, and it at the bottom it says, you know, there's this place for donate or buy a shirt or, Yes, that is something that friends
They're beautiful shirts. Beautiful shirts.
Yeah.
People buy these shirts and make YouTube videos. You know, the one thing you can do, make a YouTube video of yourself and your friends in Isaiah.
Mm-hmm.
People are already doing it. That makes a big difference. That presence on the internet is what we're going for.
Mhm. Yeah, people have been getting the shirts and taking selfies and posting them on Team Isaiah, and that within itself, it brings a smile to Isaiah's face. You know, it makes him feel good that people are, you know, that he's not just abandoned. He is not alone, and we are. And I tell him frequently, we're fighting for you. We're praying for you. We're going to get you home.
One of my listeners just posted the link up on the chat room here, too. So
Thank you so much.
BringIsaiahHome.org. So I'm going to be promoting
that today.
And I've been talking about Isaiah since I found out about it when Nancy called me. I was already in a bad mood. She told me she was going to put me in a worse mood. And I've been talking about it ever since. And I'm not going to give up. I'm still talking about Justina Pelletier. She's been home for almost a month. I can't give this stuff up. I can't leave this stuff alone. No. These are my brothers.
And there's so much more to talk about. There really is, to be honest with you, Ken. There's really so much more. And I hope we can come back on and talk to you.
You guys are welcome on this program anytime. I rearranged my whole schedule for you, Michelle, and I'll do it again and again and again. I don't care.
Thank you for
having me. This stuff has precedence. No, I thank you for coming on board.
Thank you. I appreciate you advocating for us and just shedding light and educating people.
Well, this is
going to
go on
situation.
YouTube. I've already had a couple of them. I put up a lot of my stuff that I do on the air. I put it up on YouTube as well. I break it up. So this whole show is going to go on YouTube as well. People will be able to hear it. People will be able to listen to it.
People can share that on YouTube. A lot of people who really made the Justina campaign are people who are disabled by mitochondrial disease. And they, just at their computers, they share things all day long.
Right.
And
that's all
things, and the more people share things, it grows exponentially. We need
that's
to make
all,
Isaiah a household.
That is one share
space.
Is all it takes, because you never know who you're going to share it to. And that's all it takes is one. So,
and 20 is even better.
Oh, absolutely. It's even a lot better. No, we definitely, Nancy, we need to work on this. We need to figure out a way to do some kind of a rally of sorts, maybe all over the country, wherever you are. Even if you're the only person standing on the street corner with a sign in your hand, that's all it's going to take. If we could pick one day, maybe his birthday, August 27th, that's his birthday. Maybe we can.
Well, we have to do something for his birthday. We are doing and I think we need to get together. I'm sorry, I've got low blood sugar.
No, that's all right.
I've got to go. Please forgive me.
We'll talk again.
But Michelle, I'll leave Michelle to say to make her mind up on how long she can talk. But Ken, this is certainly the beginning of much, much more. And I'm excited about this campaign because I know we're going to get Isaiah home. I know we're going to do it, and I know that we're going to bring people along and that people are going to learn more about what's going on, and they're going to feel more empowered that we can do something. And
maybe
then because
we
feel we
can
do something, we can take this country back.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, Isaiah said to me the last time I saw him on July the 1st, he said, Mom, maybe through this we can help other children. Isaiah has a big heart. You know, he's my response to him was, we can only pray that, Isaiah, you know, that that there is good that comes from this. It is a terrible situation, but, we do hope that we can
we
be
just
got to
keep up
for,
the fight. No matter how much the pain, you just keep up the fight. Just keep fighting no matter what. So, anyway,
I
appreciate you coming on here, Michelle. What you're going through, your schedule, my Lord, and to take the time that you took tonight, I really, really, really appreciate you coming on. You're welcome anytime. You got any update? Now, I put on your Facebook page a request to be a friend. My name, Kenneth Boxman.
Yes, absolutely.
Keep in contact with me. Any update, anything, anytime you need somebody with a mouth, I've got a huge mouth, and I never shut up, so I'm not afraid to speak. And I'm not afraid to let anybody hear it. I don't care who. I scream at everybody. Every politician, they get their ass chewed out for me every single night. I don't care who they are, Republican, Democrat. And this is not politics. This has nothing to do with Republican or Democrat. This has to do with human beings treated like animals, not less than animals, less than animals. And it just irritates me to no end. And now my blood pressure's skyrocketing. Nancy's blood pressure is down. Mine's up. So. But anyway, girls, you hang tough in there. We're going to get Isaiah home. We're going to get him home. I took all these notes here.
Thank you.
Let's get something. And my listeners will get involved in this, too. Maybe they can talk it on their shows. A lot of people that listen to this show have their own shows as well. And a lot of people, they download. So maybe let's work on a day. Maybe we could do a nationwide rally, and not just for Isaiah, even though we got to get him home, but for every single child. We don't know the numbers. That's the problem. We don't know. It could be tens of thousands. It could be hundreds of thousands. God forbid if it's over a million.
Right.
But we don't know that number. So you're right. It's gonna take the whole country to get Isaiah home. And I just hope, I just hope that he can hang tough too. Because he's the one, you're suffering. But I can just only imagine the suffering that this kid is going through at 16. And being in a foster home, and those foster homes are not, they're not that friendly with newcomers. I can only imagine what kind of stuff that, I don't even want to talk about that. We're going to have to forget about that. Let's go somewhere else. But nevertheless, we got to get him home. I'm glad you've got representation. I'm glad you've got an attorney. I hope they can do it. Now, Liberty Council, are they involved with you as well? They were with Justina Pelletier. They actually were very instrumental in bringing her home. Are they familiar with your case?
Not at this time. We have reached out to them, my attorney is open to any advice or, he's open to anyone. I mean, he's very easy to work with, and, he's open to any support
when these kids come home, I want to see some people in some handcuffs, because this is wrong. I want to see people in handcuffs. You do not kidnap kids. You do not perform medical experiments on adults, kids, period. You just don't do that. But the biggest problem
is, they need to be taken away from their families, like they've taken my son and other children. And then for my son, he suffered tremendously. And while many stood by and watched and said, "You can do it. You can make it through," for hours and days and weeks. And so maybe they need a taste of their own medicine.
Exactly, they do. Absolutely, this is, and I hate to do that because. I like to be above people like that. But and you get to a point that...
It's hard.
after a while, a civil conversation just isn't going to cut it.
Right.
Again, it goes with a bully. Yes. The only way to get rid of a bully from bullying you is you got to stand up and punch a son of a bitch in the nose. And that's it.
Right.
And that's what we got to do. We got to punch these bastards right square in the nose and let them know, you're going to do this to us? Well, we're going to do this to you. And I hate to have to go down that road, but what other choice do we have? I don't know. If somebody's got another example of how to do it, then I'm all ears. I'm ready to go.
Right.
But, anyway, Michelle, I'm going to let you go. I really do appreciate you coming on board. Keep in touch with me.
Thank you so much.
Run off at the mouth. You let me know. I'm very well equipped when it comes to that. So I got no trouble doing that. But hang tough, and hopefully the next time you talk to Isaiah, let him know that he does have people on his side.
He does have people on his
side, and we're going to get him home. So. Anyway,
thank you so much.
All righty, my dear.
Thank you for the support.
You've got it all. All righty, Michelle. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye. Unbelievable, people. I cannot believe that this is happening. Honest to good God Almighty, what they're doing to our kids, and it just keeps going and going and going and going and going, and for what? Money? Money? That's it? Money? Are you out of your damn fool mind? You want to get a bonus? So you kidnap kids? So you can buy a new boat? What? Now, I didn't want to say it when Michelle was on the line, but I'm going to say it now, and I am pissed, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. You kidnap kids. You perform medical experiments on them. I don't care if they're children, adults. I don't give a damn. Life in prison? Ha-ha. That don't cut it. That does not cut it. Death penalty. Period. I don't care. I know that is strong. I know that it is wrong to think that way. You don't do that. You do not kidnap children and use them as lab rats. Now, as far as I'm concerned, absolutely. That is most definitely death penalty worthy. How is it not? I don't know. I don't see any other way. This is just beyond. And they are right. It is going to take all of us. It is going to take every single one of us. Now, hopefully we can get this rally. Hopefully we can do this and we can bring this kid home. And then we got to bring another kid home. And then another. And then another. And then another. This is not going to stop. This is not going to stop until we stop it. And it's going to take all of us, not just the people on the right, but all of us. Every single damn one of us. It doesn't matter what your color is. White, black, green, yellow, red. If you're a human being, even if you're an illegal alien, this should concern you. So if you think for one second they can kidnap citizens, who's to say they can't kidnap you as an illegal alien? It's a lot easier for them to kidnap you as an illegal alien than it is for an American citizen. So don't think for one second that they're not going to do that. And you're right, Iggy. Close that DCF. Abso-damn-lutely. Abso-damn-lutely. And the HHS. You're right. Close down the whole government. That's what I'd like to do. But we do have a government. And it's right here in our Constitution, and all we got to do is follow it. That's it. And it's a pretty simple document. But we don't. Because too many people are making too much money and creating too much power for themselves. And what are you going to do with that power again? Again, I don't understand. I do not understand what this prize is of all this power. I don't get it. To me, I would be bored with that much power. But that's me. We got to take power over ourselves, but not anybody else. We're human beings. Do these people not understand we're human beings? I mean, my Lord, and Michelle was right. We got to take their kids. See how they like it. Remove them from their family. How would they feel? Well, it's not going to happen to me. Oh, yeah, it's never going to happen to you until it does. And then you want to stand up and bitch. Well, if you're not going to stand up and bitch, piss, and moan about this, then don't bitch, piss, and moan when they come and take your child away. Because I don't want to hear it. Now is the time. Now is the day. And angry. She was right. Michelle is right. We have to get angry. We're not going to solve this problem until we do. Civil conversations at this point is not going to cut it. Civil conversations is what got us into this mess. So we're going to take a few ass whoopings. That's what's going to get us out of this mess. And it starts now, and it starts with every single one of us. And we can do it. We just have to do it. And that's it. All right, I want to thank everybody that was listening. A lot of you on your smartphones don't, it shows up on my numbers, but you don't show up in the chat room. But that's all right. I know you're listening. And I know a lot of you listen in your in archive, which is fine, as long as you're listening. And if you like this program, you like this show, tell your neighbors, tell your friends. Join the party. Join in. Join the fight. We're not going to get our freedom back until we all join the fight. And the fight, I'm sorry, but it lasts forever. It's not just a one fight. It's not a one-shot Johnny. It's every single day. And that's okay. We can do it. We can do it. It's not going to hurt you. It's not going to hurt you a bit. And you're going to feel good about yourself. You're going to feel real good about yourself when you wake up one morning and you're free. The feeling that you will have will be overwhelming. And that's what we got to get. So thank everybody for listening. I really do appreciate every single one of you that do listen. I really do appreciate it. So thank you very much for listening. Have a great weekend. Get involved. Look up all this stuff. BringIsaiahHome.org. Team Isaiah. Save Isaiah. And write this bastard congressman, Emmanuel Cleaver. He's a Missouri representative. I guess it's in Cook County. And the governor, his name is Nixon. Well, both of them are going to get a letter from me. We're going to demand these. We have to demand. We don't request. Screw request. Request? No, 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 no. You call up a radio station and you request your favorite song. You don't demand a favorite song. Well, when it comes to your kid being kidnapped, you don't request to get him home. You demand to get him home. And that's what it takes. That's what it takes. Everybody have a very nice weekend, and we'll see you back here Monday night at 8 p.m. Goodbye, everybody.